Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Welcome, everybody. It's Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. This hour of Wyman and Bob is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. We got a big show today, Dave. We got a lot to discuss, a lot of people to talk to. We got Mark Schlereth joining us for his appearance, his weekly appearance in the Stink Tank, I think is what we've officially named it. So that'll be coming up at 3 o'clock. We got Mike Blowers, who joins us every week at 3:30. John Clayton at 4 o'clock. Damian Lewis in our player spotlight at 5 o'clock, and then El Hombre right after him at 5:10, and then short show again. We turn you over to the Mariners pregame show immediately following Michael Bradley.
5:30.
Yeah.
Around. Yeah.
Yeah. Right around there. So we're packed.
How about those Mariners, Bob?
How about them?
I know. We're getting to it later in the show.
How about them, Dave? we'll get to the Mariners here. We'll get to the Mariners. But we were just actually looking at the TV screen, and it's amazing that, you know, this is what we were going to talk about, and then you look up on the screen, and they've got quotes from Pete Carroll talking about Russell Wilson,
yeah,
and, you know, wish he could have helped us. Wish he, you know.
You know who thought of that first?
Who's that?
You.
Yeah.
You sent an email last night.
It's been an interesting, you know, we get caught in this mode of trying to parse what people are saying, because managers in baseball and head coaches in football very often they speak in very general terms, and they're not going to call anybody out per se. It's a very rare occasion where somebody says, hey, this guy didn't compete. This guy needs to step it up. Or this guy, what he did was unacceptable. Whatever. It's always generalities and very, very vague. But for Pete, he's been about as critical as maybe we've ever heard him of Russ. Now, he talked about, this is from the press conference, he talked about the early success they had, you know, throwing the ball down the field, and that Russ got into that's where he was leaning, but maybe it wasn't the best option.
The last sequence, you know, he was very aggressive with the shots we took, and as we look back, we would say, okay, let's dump the ball off, you know, because we didn't convert on him. But he had been successful being really aggressive in the game, and you know, he was trying to just keep going, keep pushing it. But so I wish he would have, you know, been able to keep us moving with a couple checkdowns late in the game, in the overtime in particular. But we were, you know, we were playing with confidence. We were going after it, and he tried to take advantage of it.
So you're looking at that going, okay, that's in the heat of the moment after the game. That's the press conference with all the media. Then the next morning, he's on with Salk, as he is every week, and they talked about the same situation, and he doubled down.
I thought Russ took advantage of the game well until that last sequence. We had a play action pass, and I wish we could, you know, control the ball and check the ball down there. Took a shot at Tyler, and then we went up to DK on second down, and then our opportunity, you know, escapes us right there, and they get the ball inside the 40. You know, so that sequence was the one. I wish Russ could have helped us there, you know, and this made completions for us. We needed to just move the ball there and change the field position at least in overtime, you know, because you're playing field goal right there, and unfortunately we didn't get it done.
How do you think Russ responds to hearing that? We know publicly what he'll say, but behind the scenes when he hears that and hears that, okay, here's what you said immediately following the game, after a night of sleep, looking at some film, and then talking about it again, you reemphasize that point.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, it kind of takes me back to the off season. Remember, they said nothing.
Yeah.
So and Pete typically doesn't do that. So it's just so unlike him to try to deliver some kind of a message or a lesson through the media.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm kind of confused by it.
It's very un-Pete-like.
Yeah. So, but, you know, maybe we're not, you know, hearing it the right way.
Is it a bigger deal because of what you just said, because of what took place in the offseason? We had the drama and, you know, that was such a big story. Does this feel bigger than maybe it is?
Yeah.
It just feels like Pete doesn't normally, even if you know he's annoyed by something, he doesn't. He's not that specific.
Yeah, I think we're back to what we were doing in the off season, and that's like you said, parsing Pete or trying to put words in his mouth or meaning behind whatever he's saying. And you know, and I don't know. I'm just trying to think back. Like last year, was there ever a time where you heard Pete say anything about Russ as far as helping us out? And
I don't know that I've heard him say anything like that before. That's what makes it unique. Maybe he said it when he was a young guy and, you know, made mistakes or something. I don't recall it, but as a seasoned pro who's established, who's being paid like one of the elite quarterbacks, is considered one of the elite quarterbacks, I don't recall ever hearing Pete be that sort of direct, like, yeah, I wish he could have helped us out with that.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny that, you know, like what he wanted, and, you know, we talked about this a little bit yesterday, the 1 minute, 5 second drive at the end of the half. I mean, short right to Travis Homer, run out of bounds for 11 yards. That pass probably traveled 3 yards in the air.
Mm-hmm.
Then Russell Wilson, short right to Tyler Lockett, ran out of bounds for 8 yards. Same thing, 3-4 yard pass. He turns and runs. Then it's Freddie Swain for 12 yards again. You know, not a deep pass or anything like that. You know, then DK Metcalf for 8, and then they hit the run. You know, that's what it looked like last week against the Colts. And when they went into halftime, I was like, wow, this is great. You know, and what we saw in that overtime, that was exactly like the Giant game last year.
Yeah.
And I mentioned that yesterday, but also the look on Russell's face. I haven't seen that look on his face since the press conference after the playoff game last year, where he just looked, it was kind of angry. He looked confused. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I'm not sure what happened there, you know, because all of a sudden just totally abandoned that. And look, Pete's right. I mean, he could have checked it down to Chris Carson. He could have thrown an easy crossing pattern to Tyler Lockett on the second play, you know, and then who knows where it goes from there. But, you know, where was all of that?
Yeah.
Where was that second half, two-minute drive, or I'm sorry, second quarter, right before the halftime? Where was that play selection? Where was – and same thing with the Colts. You know, I mentioned this. He had a pass deep to DK Metcalf that he could have thrown in the Colt game, and he chose to check it down.
Yeah.
But, and I'm not saying it was a check down. Like, it was a shallower route to Chris Carson.
It was more of a sure thing, an easier pass to make.
Much easier. And, you know, it was going to – you know, if you get the ball 4 yards past the line of scrimmage to Chris Carson, you're probably going to get 7, right, at least.
Yeah.
So, you know, where was that? Yeah, it's very strange. So, I mean, I think if Pete is going to do that this year, this was the time to do it, is to, you know, kind of call,
dip,
I guess,
into the butt early.
Russell Wilson out. Yeah, I don't know. I know, because, again, it's unusual, and I don't know if that was Pete's intent. Maybe he looks back and then goes, yeah, maybe I shouldn't have put it that way, or maybe he goes and talks to Russ. I don't even know if those guys are listening to the media. Are they even listening or reading the papers or anything like that? Because I'm sure they've had a conversation about it, and whatever that conversation is, it's probably not going to have anything to do with the papers. You know, this happened one time with me. It was Wade Phillips, and I got injured in practice because some guy rolled into my knee, and I had like a 10-week, you know, where I had to go and get surgery and rehab and everything. And then I played in 3 games, was playing well, got my knee blown out again like 10 weeks later. And I remember Wade Phillips, I read in the paper, he said, yeah, these guys like Wyman, that, you know, they need to realize they're not only hurting themselves, they're hurting the team. And the reason why,
like,
I was,
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to blow out my knee. I should have thought about it before I did it.
I was running down the tight, or down the seam with the tight end, and in cover two, and our hardest hitting, you know, safety Dennis Smith closed his eyes and blew my knee out. I mean, I didn't really have anything to do with that. And I remember I was on my crutches. And I was done for the season, so I was at home mostly. I got in my car, went down to the facility, and, you know, waited outside of the team room because they were having the team meeting, and, you know, confronted him about it because I was so mad.
Yeah.
And he goes, well, Dave, I think you know how I feel about you and this and that. And I'm like, yeah, but I just don't understand why you didn't need to say that.
Yeah, he's making it sound like you made a decision that was the wrong one.
Yeah, and maybe it came out wrong or whatever. And, you know, and I loved Wade, and he loved me. I mean, he was all in on signing me. That was my second year there with the Broncos. The first year worked out great. So, yeah, it's I don't know if those guys are experiencing – I mean, are they reading the media? Are they reading the paper? Are they listening to interviews,
you know,
things?
It.
Somebody's probably going to tell – them that, which I would always tell guys like Doug Baldwin and stuff like that. Like, if somebody comes to you and says, hey, I heard this guy was talking mess about you and that, they're not your friend.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, that's you shouldn't be doing it. But I don't know. I'm not sure if he's listening to it or Pete's listening to it. It's just, yeah, it's kind of a new twist for Pete. I don't mind it. Well, and he's not wrong.
Let me ask you this, and this actually came from a texter yesterday, which I thought was a good question. You guys can text in 710-710 to the Mac and Jack's text line throughout the show whenever you want. But I'll paraphrase because I don't remember exactly how they worded it. But it was something along the lines of, hey, are we now realizing that, you know, the lack of wanting to check the ball down? You know, and that's been a complaint, not just this season. It's only two games old. This has been ongoing for years. And often it would be Shoddy or whoever the offensive coordinator was at the time taking the brunt of the criticism. Like, what's he doing? Why would you call that play? Is it Russ? Is it Russ that's reluctant just to look at any of that? Maybe they are. Maybe it's being emphasized by past coordinators, but it's Russ who's got the reluctance to do it. Do you think there's truth to that? That he's just like, yeah, I know it's there, but I still want to. I'm going to dig my heels in. I want to go for the deep bomb. I want the big play.
Well, and Pete kind of said that, like he sort of insinuated in one of those quotes there that like I'm paraphrasing, but it, like he fell in love with the deep ball. He wants to throw it deep, and those two, it was very confusing to me what those two passes that he threw in, because what was it, a three play drive that they had in overtime? Had three plays and went backwards, like,
yeah,
you know, 15 yards or whatever. So
it was awful.
Yeah, it was very interesting. And on both of those plays, and, you know, same thing. I remember one of the sacks that he took in the Giant game. That's why I keep comparing it. I just remember seeing Carlos Hyde wide open, you know, and out in the flat. Nobody on him. Nobody within 8-10 yards of him. So I wonder.
Three plays minus 12 yards.
Yeah. I mean, and I'm sorry, that was a safety. The game
yes,
should have been over right there. So, yeah, it's interesting that, you know, now all of a sudden we're kind of hearing about it. So, I don't know, you know, does Russ get rebellious? Is he, you know, maybe having an argument with Pete over this? It's interesting. We'll see how it plays out. Because, again, going back to the offseason, Pete's policy is pretty much don't say anything.
Yeah, and people texting in, and a couple people saying essentially the same thing, 253. I'm sure Pete isn't saying anything that he hasn't already said to Russ.
Right.
Which I think that texter's right. I don't think he's speaking to the assembled media after the game or speaking to Mike Salk and saying things that, and then Russ is going to go, wait, what did you say?
No, yeah, that's absolutely
true. So you're right, texter. Russ has heard this before any of us heard it.
Yeah.
Now, maybe he wouldn't love him repeating it publicly. There could be that aspect. I don't know. I don't know how Russ takes this. You know, there are conversations behind the scenes and between coach and player. Maybe there's an expectation this is between us and it's public. Maybe there isn't. Maybe it's not a big deal at all. It is a national thing. As I said, we come in and it's on the screen on the NFL Live on ESPN, and they've got his quotes and they're up there debating it. So it's not a local thing. It's not you and I creating a topic. Let's create a situation that doesn't exist. No, this has caught the eyes and ears of those around the league in the NFL. Like, whoa. What do you think of what Pete said?
Yeah, and well, and also, how about this? What about the conversation between Pete and Shane Waldron? You know, I mean, what's going on there? And maybe he's on Pete's side, like, yeah, I don't know why Russ threw it deep there or whatever. But, yeah, because, you know, that was the other thing that, remember when he was going to hire an offensive coordinator, everybody was saying, oh, well, Pete's just going to meddle with it and make him run the ball. And if he throws two or three interceptions, he's going to step in and tell him to stop throwing the ball. So, you know, I don't. They had it down in camp, and we saw it play out in Indianapolis, and really after a pretty rough start. I mean, remember the first few plays, he was on the run, scrambling.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I would say, as much as we've talked about, not to change the subject too much, but we've talked a lot about what a great offensive line they had. But, you know, they've had trouble moving guys off the line.
Yeah.
As far as running the ball.
Yeah, the run blocking hasn't been
good.
No, I don't think it's been good. This is a quality text right here, Dave. 253. This would never happen if Pete went to Clayton's high school.
All right,
You're right.
I appreciate that. A little bit of levity in what is normally a very tense conversation to have. We're worried about Pete. We're worried about Russ.
I love it.
Somehow Clayton's high school. Do we even know what his high school is called?
No. I don't. We should call Gronk. He knows. I don't. You know, they were classmates, apparently. But, yeah, it's an interesting thing. I don't know that it's, you know, we're not trying to create drama where it doesn't exist. But anybody who's paid any attention to the way Pete talks, and specifically about in the way that he speaks of Russell Wilson, you hear that that's different. That is different. That's not a creation. If you've paid attention, you understand that he doesn't normally say things like that and double down on them again. So I think there is a reason that people outside of Seattle are looking at it going, whoa, what was that? Is it going to turn into something? I don't know. Maybe it's nothing. Maybe Russ agrees. Maybe Russ is going, you know what? You are absolutely right. I fell in love with it. I saw DK. I thought I had a shot here. I've got to be more like Brady. That's the beauty of what Tom Brady does, and it pains me to say that, is he'll do that all day. Mm-hmm. He'll dink and dunk and just nickel and dime you to death. And I would think as a member of a defense, that had to be even more frustrating than a bomb, than him completing a big 60-yard pass, just 7 yards here. Here's six.
It is.
Here's eight. Here's four. Here's seven. Here's just, you know what I mean? It's like just constant punches, and you're finally, by the end of it, you're just like, I got to take a knee.
Well, and you're tired.
Yeah.
Also, so, yeah, that's the thing. I mean, I've always said the most humiliating thing is, you know, when they run it at you, and you're out there for 10, 12 plays, and you just get beat up. I mean, a deep bomb, it's like, oh, you know, that's one, two plays, and you're off the field. They scored. That doesn't feel as bad as, you know, a long drive where they just – dominate you all the way down the field. And you know, the way that they ran that 2 minute drill before half is just, you know, they hit with the run up the middle. That's what happens when you check it down. Look what happened to the Seahawks. I mean, that's the same type of thing. They just kept testing. And I did a football 101 thing today on some of that play action pass where, you know, they're trying to get you to step up, so then they throw it over, you know, over your head, and then they run it at you, and then they come back with the play action pass again. I mean, you have to shut it down. You have to prove to them that you're able to do that. And you know, if they're just dumping the ball off here and there, and now all of a sudden you don't expect it, and then you get tired of the checkdowns,
right?
And you start jumping stuff, and they throw it over your head. So I mean, that's kind of how, yeah, it's like a fighter, like you were saying. You know, you just kind of set him up, and you know, hit him with a bunch of different punches, and then all of a sudden doesn't have to be a knockout punch.
No, it just breaks you down to where you've just got nothing left, and I just can't imagine how frustrating that'd be on defense. That's what the Titans did. I mean, he's throwing little dump off passes to Derrick Henry out of the backfield, little screens, he wasn't chucking it down the field for 80 yards, 60 yards. They just sat there and just beat you down, an extended drive, first drive out of the half.
I think
80 yards.
Yeah. I think the deepest pass was that one that Trey gave up to Julio Jones where he spun it.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, is taunting.
Should have been taunting.
But, you know, it was pretty cool, though. I don't know how he does that, but that thing spun for a long time. Did you notice that?
I did not notice it because I was too
I did.
Ticked
I was
off like, at the time.
That was pretty cool, man.
I was too mad to give him credit for his ball spinning skills, Dave.
Yeah.
I didn't care at that point, but you're right. Should have been taunting. Absolutely. So we'll see. We'll watch it. We'll see. And you know, there's part of me that believes Russ is looking at that going, he's absolutely right. I wouldn't be stunned to see a different version of Russ in that sense that, hey, they're hitting checkdowns. Hey, they're using tight ends. And we'll get to tight ends a little bit later. But I could just see it looking dramatically different this weekend.
Yeah. Well, hopefully they get back to what we saw in Indianapolis, because that was really well done. And I just, again, Russ didn't look panicked or confused or never out of sorts in that game. And he did in the Tennessee game.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Look, the more I think about this and the more I look at that team, the more I think, number one, that's a playoff team, the Titans.
Oh, yeah.
Number two, I would say this.
They're stacked.
They're playing the NFC West. I think the only team that can beat them is maybe San Francisco, because they're also incredibly physical and they have a really good run game and they're very sound and solid. But I feel like they can beat the Rams. For sure. But, yeah, you know, and I was going to say it, and they could definitely beat the Arizona Cardinals, but oops, that already didn't happen.
Yeah.
But, yeah, they're playing the NFC West. I feel like hopefully they can take down both the Rams and the 49ers, but I think this is a really good team. I think they're really well coached, and what they did with their defensive players who were backups that played really well. That David Long Jr., he had a hit, I think it was on Carson, that was like, you could hear it up on the booth. The guy's a backup, you know, so they just had these guys really well coached. They were very patient and just kept picking away. And again, like I said, it's like whoever can do right for the longest, and that's what they did. So that was a lesson for the Seahawks. And, you know, hopefully that, you know, we'll see, like I said, that kind of offense and Russ come around to what he was in week one instead of week two.
Yeah, and that's I think you hit the one thing. I'm not saying it makes it palatable, but I guess if you're going to take any sort of positive out of that game, is you didn't get beat by a bunch of slappies.
No.
That offense, the fact that they held Derrick Henry to 35 yards in the first half is a minor miracle.
Yeah.
He is ridiculous. He's led the league in rushing the past two seasons, rushes for over 2,000 yards. He is an absolute monster. Julio Jones and A.J. Brown, I mean, and Tannehill, as we said, is a very good quarterback. Not elite, but he's very good. So the idea that, you know, you got beat by that team and you look at who they're dealing with, you're going, yeah, that kind of makes sense. We talked about it before the game. Hey, this is not going to be Cardinals part two. That would be stunning if the Seahawks went out there and blew them out. The team's too good. Mm-hmm. It just wasn't realistic to expect 2 weeks of that performance, and turns out it wasn't going
to
happen.
I have to say I fell into the trap, though, that like when they showed up and like Taylor Lewan's not playing and they're, you know, half their line was out because of COVID's and, you know, all kinds of things were going on the defense. I thought, okay, well, they should take care of this. But, yeah, again, very well-coached team, because when you can plug your backups in and then just stick to the standards of what you do. And, man, Henry, is it impressive to you that he got 182 yards on the road? Last year, he averaged 153 yards on the road.
He's ridiculous. He's just a monster. He's a ridiculous back. He's fun to watch. I didn't enjoy watching him this weekend, but outside of that, I really enjoy watching him. And he's another guy, we talked about it. He doesn't look fast, but he's blowing by guys. He just, you know, visually, as you watch him, you're not going, wow, that guy is a burner. Like when you're watching Tyreek Hill run, you're going, he looks fast. He doesn't look that fast like Gronk, but they just blow by guys. It's amazing. All right, let's take two.
Well, Wildcard Watch 2021 back on. The Mariners had the 4-2 win last night, and they're three games back of the wild card after a Blue Jays loss. Here's the schedule today for the teams they're chasing. The Mets begin a series at the Red Sox. The Rays are hosting the Blue Jays, and the Blue Jays lost to the Rays last night, and the Yankees are home against the Rangers.
So we're Mets fans, we're Rays fans, and we're Rangers fans is what we are, Dave.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, and we'll talk about the game later on in the show, but I got caught. There's a football game on. I love the NFL. I was watching the Mariners. I would check in on the football game here and there, but I was watching the Mariners.
Well, it was the Lions. So
yeah.
I did enjoy the – I watched the Manning broadcast. I forgot again. It's on ESPN2.
God, I can't believe I forgot. But I was watching the Mariners anyway, so I was distracted.
Well, I'll tell you what. I got to, you know, a point with the game where I switched it – the Monday Night Football game. I switched it over to watch the A's. I'm sorry, the Mariners and beat the A's. And, you know, and I was kind of fast-forwarding through, the first couple innings. But, man, that was that's exciting. And like you said, it's always entertaining to hear what they have going on out there in the crowd.
There's 37 people in the stands, and it sounds like you've got a mic next to an amusement park roller coaster.
Yeah.
Just constant screaming and noise, and just it's amazing the amount of noise that tiny little crowd could make.
What are those shaker things called?
Maracas?
Maracas.
Yeah.
Yeah, sounds like those are there. They've got a harmonica there.
They've got everything.
A cowbell. A
couple of vuvuzelas.
Yeah, it's a very passionate group of people that show up. But they listed, I think, the attendance at just a shade over 4,000, which is absolutely incorrect. There's no way there were 4,000 people in that stadium. But it sounded like 40,000. They're incredibly loud.
What was that? A who, who, what, what?
Vuvuzela. You don't remember those from the World Cup?
Soccer.
The most annoying sound alive.
Plastic horns.
Oh, yeah.
I'll get 10 minutes of it for you coming back out of a break.
You know, I've officially become my dad. I just said, a who, what, what? That's what my dad would do. Like, whatever, how many ever syllables, it would be who and what.
Let's talk to Dr. Rick. Get you taken care of.
Hey, we have a fun Peyton Manning clip coming up later in the show. You'll get a little taste of the Manning cast. But there's a new name on the Steelers injury list today. Ben Roethlisberger, the 39-year-old quarterback dealing with a pec injury. He was sacked twice and hit 10 times on Sunday against the Raiders.
And I'm sure he's milking it.
Oh, don't say that. Somebody got mad at me on the text yesterday for implying that he's soft. So no, he's got a well-earned and well-known reputation for playing up his injuries.
Do you remember the one where he was going up the tunnel and he was limping, and he turned around to see if a camera was looking?
Yes, he's earned this. I'm surprised people are in the dark about Ben. It's got nothing to do with his ability. He's obviously been a great quarterback. He's a guy who likes that attention of powering through. I'm powering through it.
Yeah.
You know, he's there are players that don't want to discuss injuries. He's more than happy to talk about them.
Yeah. He's the opposite of John Elway.
Yes.
Elway would never let you know that he was hurt. And also, you know what? I'll throw Russ in there because he has survived some brutal hits.
Yeah.
And then
he doesn't
know,
tell you anything about it.
He's made of rubber.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's like, oh, I just want to get out there and play. And he doesn't even miss practice.
Yeah. All right. Take two is brought to you by Swedish Cyberknife. Treat prostate cancer with Swedish Cyberknife. Swedish.org/cyberknife prostate. Coming up, question, is Will Dissly still on the Seahawks roster? We'll talk about that next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
This hour of Wyman and Bob is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Coming up at the top of the hour, Mark Schlereth will join us for his weekly appearance. We will get into the stink tank, as it's being called, with Mark coming up at the top of the hour. Stay tuned for that conversation. We asked the question before the break, is Will Dissly still on the Seahawks roster? As far as we can tell, he is. Yet, he was absent in this game. Not a target, Dave. Not one.
Nary a target.
This is the guy you said would be the third leading or third most targeted?
Yes.
Third most targeted behind Lockett and DK.
Correct.
They'll be one and two in whichever order. And then number three in your mind was Dissly. I picked Everett. Right now I'm ahead because Everett had two targets.
Yeah.
The tight ends as a group in this game had two targets, one reception, 3 yards.
Yeah.
How is that possible? You brought Everett in here. That was one of your big offseason acquisitions. We'll get to Dissly in a moment, but just, you know, this is a guy you brought in. He was familiar with Waldron, the offense they ran there. It was going to make this transition easier. And in a game where you needed to move the ball, especially late because you scored a total of 6 points in the second half and overtime combined, so the offense became a problem. How is he not a security blanket on some level? His familiarity, his, you know, for either the play caller in Waldron or the quarterback in Russell Wilson. I find that amazing when you look at that box score and see Dissly was not targeted at all. And this guy that you brought in, you paid a decent amount of money to, was targeted twice and had one catch for 3 yards.
Well, I'd say the good news is that Freddie Swain had 5 targets and 5 catches. And, you know, the 68-yard deal where, and I don't want to, maybe he got lucky there. You know,
yeah.
I don't want to take anything away from it, that's for sure. But
well, somebody blew it.
Somebody blew it, definitely. But so that's the good news. But, yeah, that just kind of indicates that they were not taking the checkdowns. I mean, look at the targets for Lockett and Metcalf. It's more than twice what they had last week. There were 5 targets for each had 4 catches, both of them exactly the same. And this week, both were targeted 11 times, Lockett and Metcalf. Lock 8 catches and Metcalf 6. And there's no doubt that Lockett had a great day and everything. But, yeah, I would have liked to have seen Carson on there. He was not targeted. The only running back they threw it to was Travis Homer.
Yeah.
But, I mean, if you'd have told me, Travis Homer's going to have more targets than Will Dissly, I'd say that's a mistake. And, again, they got away from it last year as well, only 29 targets.
You put that on the play caller or the guy throwing the ball?
Well, a lot of it is, you know, a situation where, you know, and if you go back and look, it's easy to look at the stats and go, okay, well, you know, why didn't they throw it to him? And sometimes it's a situation and it just doesn't come up. But, yeah, I would put it on Russ. You know, I'm sure he was running pass routes.
Well, here's Pete being asked about that on the non-involvement, if you will, of the tight ends.
No, you know, late in the game, you know, or middle of the third quarter sometime, you know, I made mention, you know, that Gerald hadn't gotten the ball much, you know, and we had some stuff called and, you know, we had tried to get some things done and it just didn't work out as it happens sometimes. But there was not a change in our approach, you know, other than we just didn't get the ball to him.
Yeah, and that's what Pete's talking about there.
He isolated Gerald there. Gerald Everett. He didn't say anything about Dissly.
So
he
mentioned this.
There were things called for him. It didn't work out. Maybe he was covered, whatever reason.
Exactly what I was talking about.
Yeah.
You know, like you can go back and look at the stats and say, oh, yeah, this didn't happen. But, you know, in some of the situations, like I think if Pete took you through the film, he would say, okay, you know, how do I get the ball to him here when, you know, we have him blocking or whatever. And it just so happens that way. I don't think it was any kind of, you know, he wasn't shunned or anything like that.
Right. Pete talked about also this being a part of the learning curve for Shane Waldron.
Yeah, just finding the consistency, you know, and the rhythm. You know, the rhythm escaped us, you know, through the course of that game. And because we scored so explosively and after the turnover, you know, we never really found our way and when we needed it, you know. So that's
realizing how important it is to have that sense of the mix of the run and the pass so that we can get what we want done. And so that's, you know, he's going to keep learning. He's the same guy he was week one. He's a fantastic football coach, and he's helping the heck out of us and had us in great position. We need to win that football game.
Helping the heck out of us.
Oh, I'm surprised Pete didn't go, helping the heck out of us? What did I just say?
He's got a knack. He just has a knack. He's helping the heck out of us.
I like the way Pete talks. I like the way he communicates.
Well, and he's right. He's the same guy in week one when we were all excited saying, hey, that was – remember, we're going good, bad, and ugly, going, I'm really nitpicking with the bad and the ugly here from that game because it was such a complete game. You're just excited about what you saw on both sides of the ball. And then we come to – 1 week later, and we're going, all right, we got problems. We got problems. What's going on here? Tight ends don't exist. Defense fell apart. Offense fell apart. What happened? It's the nature of football. 1 week means so much. It's not 162 games like baseball. You've got one now. You've got one extra game this year. You got 17 games, so you still have 15 weeks to get this straightened out, and we'll forget all about this. But it's. I like it, and at the same time, it can feel too heavy at times. Like, man, you're putting a lot of stock into one game, but it's all you have for an entire week.
I know. That's the thing. You talk about baseball. Yeah, you can just flush it right away. And these guys already have. They're already moving on to Minnesota. But here we are on Tuesday, and we're not quite done with it yet. And that's fine. And I know that. But I've become as – you know, it's funny how when the week progresses, like going into a game, you get a different kind of feel. My feeling going into this game after talking to everybody in Tennessee is that, and I was on a radio station out there, I got the feeling that they were kind of disjointed. You know, the injuries and some of the new faces on defense and things like that. But the more I look at that game and the more I, you know, go through the stats and things like that, you just see that that's a really well-coached team, number one. And number two is that they have, you know, look, Derrick Henry – A.J. Brown and Julio Jones, those three, I mean, you have to say they're probably a step above D.K., Lockett, and Chris Carson.
Yeah.
I mean,
a fair statement.
I'm not trading, you know, D.K. away, I mean, and certainly not Lockett, but if you look at those the big three there, now I'd say I really respect Tannehill. I think he's a very good quarterback. He's especially become one. And I thought he was incredibly patient. You know, he just kept, you know, if something was there, you know, he
took what the defense gave him.
Exactly. And I thought they were just very methodical about it. Nobody, you know, lost their mind and decided to, you know, they didn't chuck it deep a bunch of times. Nope. They were just very, you know, mechanical about it. And, you know, getting Derrick Henry the ball, I mean, early on it wasn't working. I think he was averaging like 2.7 yards in the first half.
35 yards on 13 carries.
Yeah, and so they just kept going. Quick, do the math on that, Bob, see if I'm right. No, I'm kidding.
I can't.
Yeah. So, but anyway, no.
Don't do that.
To me, that's, you know, that's a really good team. But, yeah, if you look at those three guys, I think you would have to take Derrick Henry over Carson, as much as I love Carson. Yeah. You know,
he's the best back in the league.
AJ Brown and Metcalf are pretty similar. Both had 1,000-yard seasons the last two, and then
Julio's one of the greats.
Julio, all
the resume is there.
The guy is good for like 94 yards in yardage per game. If you go back and look at his history, so yeah, I mean that's not a bad team that you lost to, and I feel like more and more that, you know, okay, you lost that one. But now you go on the road against Minnesota is kind of a question mark. We'll see.
Well, talking about that, will the next 3 weeks make or break this Seahawks season? We'll look deeper into what's facing them next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Coming up at the top of the hour, in just about 15 minutes, Mark Schlereth will join us on the program. You don't want to miss that. Always entertaining when you get into the stink tank, which is what we're calling that. So there we go. Coming up at the top of the hour, but we got a text here, Dave. And again, you guys can text in throughout the show, 710-710 to the Mac and Jack's text line. 602, not sure where that is. Vikings lost twice in brutal fashion, and we beat them last year for the walk-off. They'll be playing with hellfire, said the texter.
I think maybe 602 is Nevada.
Is it?
Pretty sure.
Okay. But either way, we're taking a look at the next 3 weeks. So the NFC West is I think, pretty clear the best division in football once again. Everybody in there except for the Seahawks undefeated. It's only two games. But
Phoenix. Sorry.
What's that?
It's Phoenix.
602.
I knew it was somewhere I used to live.
It sounded familiar. But are these – when you look at these next 3 weeks, and again, there's 15 weeks left, but it's you need to get things righted, get the ship pointed in the right direction here, so to speak. You got the Vikings on the road, followed by the 49ers on the road, and then you've got a Thursday night game with the Rams here. How critical are those games? I mean, two of them obviously are critical in that they're division games. But this is one it feels like you got to wash the taste out of your mouth out of what happened here. It feels like you snatched a defeat from the jaws of victory is how that feels. Like you had a game, you're on your home field, you're up by, what, 15 points in the fourth quarter? Is that what it was?
30? Yeah, 14.
Yeah. And you gacked it.
Should have been 15.
Extra
missed
point.
An extra
right.
point. Yeah.
Right.
So, I mean, look, to me, the biggest concern, I'm not so much looking at the opponents. To me, the biggest concern is the offense. And that's kind of why I put it on them the other day, because that's kind of what I'm worried about. I feel like the offense is going to have to carry him this year. And it's very important that Russell is, you know, he's your franchise player. He's the guy that you have to make happy and get right with. And so it just really bothered me. The more I looked at that overtime series that they had, the more I started to worry and think that, again, I compared it to the Giant game, which I think, is that the worst loss? I mean, the playoff loss to the Rams I thought was...
It was just a bad game.
Maybe one of the worst. There was a Ram game in 2017 where they came in here and beat us like 42-7. I think Bobby was hurt for that game or something.
The Rams game felt like neither team really played particularly well. It was just kind of a gross game. It was
Yeah, and I thought the defense was just horrible. But, you know, I don't know what we can expect out of our defense.
Well, is that why you say the offense has got to carry him, because you don't know what to expect?
Yeah.
Or because if we look at the roster and we're looking at the pieces, you look at Dunlap, you look at Mayoa, you look at Hyder, Wagner, Diggs, Jamal Adams, it should be a good defense.
Right.
I think we should have expectations of that defense, but to say you don't really know what to expect, is it because you're waiting for them to become cohesive? Is it the scheme? What's your reluctance with the defense?
I don't. They just always give up big plays, you know, and that's the thing that's been with them. They're, you know, I don't understand what they're doing at the point of attack, you know, like how are they taking up gaps? Whose gaps are they? What is Jamal Adams doing? You know, I mean, how are they using him? I think they have a bunch of great pieces, but I don't know that they're playing cohesively. And I think the best player that they have is Russell Wilson, and that's what's the most important. And the most relief I've felt in a long time was watching Russ in Indy and operate that. And then again, I keep mentioning that drive at the end of the second or first half. I mean, that's it. It's not always going to be that easy. I get that, but it sure looked like Russ just was smooth and it made sense to him. And then all of a sudden in that game, a couple of times, it just didn't look like it made sense to him. So that's
falling
what
in love with
me.
The deep ball. Does he get too inspired by success? I mean, he is, I think by everybody's estimation, the best deep ball thrower in the league. And yeah, we saw it again. Do you fall in love with it? Is it overconfidence in yourself that I can make this play, we can make this play, and just really deliver the death blow, if you will, with this?
Yeah, well, I have to say, I feel like it's tougher for him than most because he can make those plays. You know, and we always talk about living to, you know, die another day. You don't want to die on this hill, whatever the phrase is, where, you know, Russ should just either eat it sometimes or just throw it away. Mm-hmm. And there's, you know, he's tempted to make those kinds of plays because he can. And I always talk about the play that was so difficult for him, the touchdown to DK Metcalf last year in the playoff game against the Rams. It was ridiculously hard. He had to run to his right and his left and dodge, and he's throwing across his body. I mean, it was just – but he can make those plays. So I think it's a temptation for him. It's kind of a double-edged sword because I think he needs, though, to err more on the side of let's just take the check down. You know, let's just take the easy throw. Let's not try to throw it deep because you're just not going to get those all the time. You're going to get them every once in a while. And the other thing is – those will come after you throw the checkdowns.
Yeah.
You know, and after you throw the shorter routes. And, you know, I would love to see run after catch much more this year because they have the guys to do it. So yeah, that's the part that worries me the most, that they're not able to get in sync on this. And then, you know, the way Pete was talking about Shane Waldron, it was almost like he was talking about one of his players.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, our young coach, you know, they just need to get things right and get better. And yeah, it's like, oh, it sure looked like everything. I mean, we just kind of took their word for it in the preseason because we didn't know. We didn't see anything.
See it, yeah.
We saw practice and looked pretty good, but that's practice. But then you go out there in the any game, makes it look pretty easy. You know, and then Russell, you know, only threw for 254 yards, but, you know, he threw it 31 times.
Mm-hmm.
The week before, he only threw it 23. I just think that's the formula for him.
Yeah, it's a little disconcerting to hear you say you don't know what to expect from this defense. They just, at some point, it's got to be addressed. If you've got that much talent on the roster, you've got to look to the coach. Whether it's Pete's defense and it's just, you know, Ken Norton is just, hey, I'm doing what Pete wants me to do. If it were up to me, if I had total autonomy, I would be doing this. I don't know what the situation is behind the scenes. But you need to start looking at whoever is in charge. If guys aren't taking on blocks, then it's up to the coach to call that guy out. Or if there's no gap discipline, it's up to the coach to fix that. I mean, if you've got the horses, which we all assume that they do when we go up and down the roster going, man, this guy's good, this guy's good, this guy's good. There's much more good than question marks or bad on that side of the ball. So to go into a season or even a weekend and going, I don't know what to expect from him, I'm looking at the coach. I'm looking at Norton. And I don't think he's a bad guy. I think he knows defense. He was a great player. But something's got to give. If the same mistakes are being made each and every week, it's up to him and Pete to hold those guys accountable. And if you're not going to play the right way, you're not going to, you know, you're going to get out of your gap or you're not going to take on blocks, then we'll put in a player that will. And I don't care what your name is or how much you're making.
Yeah. Well, and we'll see if they have to, you know, remember at one point last year where they had the sort of come to Jesus meeting and, you know, it was like, hey, we all got to step up and do our jobs. But, you know, you've got enough veteran leadership on that defense that should have happened, you know, right away. And so, yeah, I mean, I don't know. You put it on the defense. They gave up 33 points at home.
185-yard
rusher.
Whatever yards. Yeah, it was brutal. It was brutal. All right. We will definitely talk more about that. But coming up, it's your favorite segment. It's one of ours, and it's time to get into the stink tank. Mark Schlereth will join us next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.